Accession number 19057, Reel 2.
Hey, Leopard, Reel 2.
Yeah. The last few weeks of our training at Bovington, they give us dismounted training where if a tank was hit, you're supposed to remove the guns from the tank and act as a dismounted unit in action and, you know, take the Browning out and then you had to reach a physical fitness peak of having to do, I think it was 6 miles in an hour march and run and then do, I think it was a mile in 5 minutes, something like that. You had to reach that standard of physical, but you was running in army boots as well, so everybody had bloody blisters doing it. Anyway, that finished the training, had about a week on exercise into Ringwood and then got the call up to join a unit.
Well, what did that exercise take?
About 7 or 8 tanks would go off for a weekend, be self-supporting, and learn how to league the tanks up and how to cook your own food. That part didn't come late, and they didn't very much learn you how to cook your own food, and for the next 8 months you was really dependent on cooking your own food, but they could have done a bit more to learn you how to even boil a cup of make a cup of tea or something like that. But then they formed us into a draft, and it was quite amusing. From Bovington, myself and 6 other wireless operators were sent right up to Durham in Barnard Castle to form a draft of 18 people and then come all the way back down to Southampton to catch a boat. Usual army thing, but we get up to Barnard Castle and they said everything had to be packed into a valise, which we spent 24 hours trying to get it in. And it was absolutely impossible to get what they wanted in the one valise. But it had to be done. In relented and let us have a blanket outside the valise. We come down to Southampton and caught the boat across. The camp was absolutely pouring with rain the whole time we was there, 24 hours. And we caught the boat, and the draft was a sergeant major, 18 of us in charge with a sergeant major in hand. And the sergeant major was later on my sergeant major in the regiment. He was just going across. But we went across, we were supposed to land at Arromanches. But they'd just taken Dieppe, so we'd landed at Dieppe instead. And
when would that be?
Pardon?
When would that be, roughly?
I think it was about the 12th of September. Yeah, it was about the 12th of September, because we slept on a concrete floor overnight, and then straight up to the 256 forward delivery service, 18 of us wireless operators. And there we was with the, you know, delivery squadron supplies all 3 squadrons in the brigade with reinforcements. I was there 24 hours, and then of the 18, they lined us up. U6 go to 47th Dragoons, U6 go to 13 Hussars, U6 go to Sherburn Rangers, who we'd never heard of before. And we get to the Sherburn Rangers, and U2 go to A Squadron, U2 go to B Squadron, and U2 go to C Squadron. So there's just one other person who I knew arrived at the squadron. And it was just at the wrong time, too, because they were just involved in a heavy action at Geel. That was the first defence the Germans put up after Normandy, the Albert Canal, and they got across into Albert Canal on the 12th of September, but the Germans were defending it heavily and kicked us back across the canal. And then when they re-attacked on the 16th, I was suddenly dumped with the squadron office right in the middle of an action. I discovered then they had no tank for me, and I stayed with the squadron office for about a week. I discovered I could type, so they put me on typing reports and that. And they was also engaged in the regiment had been in action since 1949, and a lot of them were due for Python and Lilac. If they'd been abroad for, I think it's 4 years, they was due for Python. That was been sent back for 6 months or so in the UK, and I was engaged in typing lists for that.
What was the battalion office? How was that organised? Was it
1500 weight truck, just two men in it. The squadron clerk is Sarah old bugger named Pickles, and the other one, he's quite pleasant, Jack Borlase, which I got on quite well with, and I knew him quite well later. After that, the Arnhem Doo started, and the regiment had gone up to Grave Bridge and Nijmegen, and I followed with the office truck. And we got up to Nijmegen at Grosbeek, and I think a wireless operator on Sergeant Wheeler's tank, he had the flu or something for a week, and I was put in as wireless operator in the tank, but the rest of the crew made known that I wasn't their wireless operator. I was only there in place of this chap who had he was got flu, but they had an amusing story about him, because while he was at Giel, they'd leaguered for the night, and all the tanks had leaguered in this field, and you go to the toilet, you go to the ditch and you dig yourself a hole for the toilet. He goes up to the hedge of the toilet, and then he comes back. He says, "What other regiments in the next field?" I said, "There's no other tank regiment in the next field." He says, "There is. There's another tank regiment." He goes over there. The Germans were doing the same in the next field. They was leaguering the night. He got called over to Coles for not spotting those German. And that was quite an amusing story. What was his name? Matt Taylor. He could play a banjo. Yeah, but he come back. So by then they was forming another troop of tanks, and this new troop of tanks. My tank commander had been the driver of one of the notorious sergeants of the regiment, and he was made up to be a tank commander, and I was put in his tank. But he's an amusing story, because I got up to Nijmegen, and they were the first troops to cross over the border into Germany. First British troops to fight on German soil since 1756 or something, the Battle of Minden. And they crossed the German border, because looting had been forbidden in France, Belgium and Holland. I was in Germany now, so they was after loot. And, of course, he captured a pig and brought the pig back, and welcome addition to the rations. He was actually a butcher in civil life. They killed the pig, hung it up, to cut it up among the crews, and the colonel come up and got to hear of it. He was raising hell about looting, and what he said when somebody told him, well, they got it from German soil, crossed over on patrol. In that case, if I say no more, if there's a leg of pork in my Jeep when I go back. And we always say that's why he got promoted to tank commander. it was an action at with supporting the 82nd Airborne at Grava Bridge that the tank commander, Sergeant Roberts, got the military medal, and my tank commander got the promoted to tank commander.
Who was your tank commander?
Johnny Taylor.
So you joined the crew then?
Yeah. And I kept on a tank then for the rest of the war, to the end of the war.
Who were the rest of the crew then?
A chap named Bill Kendrick was the driver. Johnny Taylor was the commander. Wally Davis was the co-driver. And the gunner was, what's his name? Not Davis, Arthur Faulkner. But he never fitted into the crew, Arthur didn't. And he wouldn't pull his weight, so we was all after getting rid of him. But tank crews, they had to knit together. If a person didn't pull his weight, well, you go and see the sergeant major, and he's out. And tank crews were knitted together, and if they got on, well, they was lifetime friends. And of course, you had to depend on your life with them. And if a person wasn't pulling his weight, you know, there's cooking and maintenance on the tank. It was a full time occupation. We had one or two skirmishes firing around Nijmegen. And then...
what were you firing on?
During the Arnhem operation, they were trying to cut out the line up to Arnhem, and we were supporting then the 101st US Airborne Division on attacking the Germans coming out of the Reichswald Forest. And we went back there last year, first time I've been back, and it's right by the Grosbeak War Museum where we were at the time. But after that action, we weren't really in action, we was only supporting the Americans as they attacked, and we was giving supporting fire. We never really called that being in action. That was just supporting.
So you were pulled back at a line firing.
That's right.
Support,
yeah.
On German positions.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you're firing direct as well. You know, you give a position to fire at and an elevation to fire the gun at. We never really considered that being in action, but it was just supporting role.
What would your role be while you were doing the support on the wireless?
You just take orders on the wireless. You come through, well, as a wireless operator, you had a B net and an A net and another net, so you could switch. You used to lock your net, and you used to just turn the dial and lock on frequency. And the second net we was never on. We was always on the American Forces network, the the radio thing. So, and if we was wanted on a different net, we'd have a quick cobalt word over the air, and then we'd switch over on our proper frequency. But the B net was into tanks, and the A net was into squadron and back to regiment. And the wireless operator, you had to be nimble on, different frequencies you required to go on, and you had to change the frequencies every day, and you changed the codes every day. You had to be nimble of what you were doing. And also, while it's operating, you'd loaded the gun, and you also, you was more or less second in command in the tank, and whilst the tank commander's looking to the front, you're looking to the sides and to see if there's, you know, your next pair of eyes in the turret to see what's going on outside.
What would happen if the tank commander had been wounded or...?
Well, then the wireless officer would take over. And the other crew, much more experienced than I was, wouldn't perhaps agree. But, you know, you was the one operating the wireless set, so you, that was the job you would have to do.
You said you were tuned to the American forces next.
Yeah.
What were you listening to now?
You know, Glenn Miller Band and... Well, we was always on that. It was a recognised thing in our regiment that only one would be on proper net, and we'd take his turns and the rest would be on the American Forces network frequency, and only when you was really required in action would you get back onto your proper net.
Mm. Would you have any communication link with the infantry around you?
Only... Some of the tanks had telephones on them, but that was they was just about coming in to during the Reichswald battles. But yes, you'd have to link up with them, and they'd tell you a target they wanted taken out, or put a few shells in that wood over there and see what happens, or. We never were attacked by Germans in the that instance. But then the Arnhem business was over, and we moved right down south to Gallengarten. That was the first, what I call, action we was involved in.
Can you tell me in detail what happened?
Yeah, Garlingkirchen, it rained every bloody day. We was action for 10 days. We supported the 84th US Infantry, who were new to the job. And we were supporting them in taking the town of Garlingkirchen. And our trooper tank arrived, top of the hill, street going down into the town, and... We arrived, a major bloody battle going on, shells, guns firing everywhere. We arrived, everything went quiet. A Yankee top sergeant come over and says, "Ah, glad you have arrived. Would you take over now? We'll go back for some chow. We'll be back in half an hour." The noise and benefit was just for our benefit. But we was too old. And that was their first time in action. They thought they was going to impress us, but we've been in, the regiment had been in action right from Alamein. They were the wrong people. We were the wrong people for them to try and impress. Anyway, they, when they come back, they were then started dodging from house to house, and we get them supporting fire. And then someone, one of the Americans, come up with a... There was, down by the bottom, there was a station in Garlingkirchen, which was strongly held. And one of the Americans come up with an idea of loading a truck with ammunition and pushing it down the hill and poke. Got a couple of our high explosive shells stuck out the front so that when it hit anything, the whole lot went up. Well, it did. Went down the hill, 2 hours, it's disappeared when it went up. And then we followed the Americans down the hill and they took the station. That was the first day. Because we come out at night, because we reload with petrol and fuel and have a meal and back in again next morning. And next morning, I think they've got some photographs of the of the Garland Kerr connection. The next morning we had to go through, there was an archway through under the station we had to go through. It wasn't wide enough for a tank originally, but they blew it apart and then they blew all the top off, so we went through there. And then we was attacking down into the town, A squadron and B squadron, and I think we got all about mid-morning, and we come up to one house, side of one house. And it was absolutely raining with mortars from the Germans, so we got close to one house, and there was like an area which they covered over, and it was all one sea of mud, and a tank suddenly dropped down and grounded itself, so we stuck there for 24 hours while the attack continued, and then at night time all our tanks disappeared out, but we couldn't get their armoured recovery vehicle to come and take us out, so we stayed in that position all night where the Americans blew a hole in the wall so we could get in the house, but our tank was tipped over the side. But there was a lot of mortar fire and shells coming over, so we thought it best to sleep inside the tank that night.
How did you all sleep inside the tank?
Well, with difficulty. Mostly, sleep inside the tank, your seat was a little round cushion, but the driver was all right. He had a more comfortable seat. The co-driver had a comfortable seat. The gunner had his own seat. I had a little round thing to seat on, which I couldn't sleep on. And the tank commander had a little round seat. He could sleep on his, but I couldn't. I used to lie on the turret floor and swing the gun round, and there used to be an opening across, and I used to be able to stretch out full length. But when I had the 17-pounder and there was no one in the co-driver's seat, I used to sleep with my head on top of the shells. You know, put a cushion or something on top of them, and I used to sleep, stretch out like that. I could never get used to sleeping sitting up. And they used to think there was something wrong with me because I always used to sleep soundly. I slept absolutely soundly that night, and they really did think there was something wrong with me because none of them had a wink of sleep. And gunfire never kept me awake.
Was the battle continuing?
Yes, that was carrying on during the night. But we couldn't move because our track was in mid-air and our bottom was grounded. We needed a tow out, and it wasn't until midday the next day we towed out, and it found one of our bogies that, you know, track wheels had gone. So we had to tow back to the farmhouse and get a new track wheel. So that meant I lost 3 days in that battle, being out of action, which is a good thing because we had a lot of casualties then.
With that type of action, in fighting in a town, how do you operate with the infantry?
Well, they come up and tell you. They come up and tell you what they want fired on.
Do they go in first?
Not always. Sometimes they want a place opened up before they go in, and sometimes we put down smoke to, you know, so they could go in. That's the show of Rangers with the...
You're showing me a photograph in Gillican of you, the Sherwood Rangers supporting the American infantry.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are the things that you fear most, obviously, in that fighting? Is it
well, at that time, we didn't get very close to the German infantry, they were mostly at a distance, and they had tanks. They was firing at us with tanks. Their mortar fire, I've never experienced it so heavy again in Europe, and we had some pretty stiff ones in the Reichswald. But the mortar shell holes were even overlapping each other. They were such. And that was the first assault on the German Siegfried line. We was being tried out to see if we could break through the Siegfried line. When we went back after two or three days, we got to an area called the Chateau, which the Americans had taken, and just around that area was the pillboxes, and the Siegfried line defences, and we had to get our tanks with accurate fire and fire at these slits and try and hit them before the Americans could attack and get near them, because they had covering fire everywhere. Actually, tanks were essential. The Americans infantry would have never taken any area without that.